Welcome to the Up the Cream Podcast 2022, Episode 2. I'm Dan Tomlinson and I'm joined as always by Rich Harrison, aka Pommy Rich. How are you doing, pal?
I'm well, mate. And you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. We've had an exciting week at Hull. It's been weird. I thought this would be really quiet, thinking, oh, we've got a fortnight between the Bradford and Leeds games, and then Hull obviously go to Loughborough. They have a little training camp there. They're sparring with, you know, Olympians and doing all sorts, and Jake Connor fancies a career of boxing. You know, you've got a training match with some good stuff to come out of that. You've got Luke Gayle announced as captain. There was some positive news with Frank Pritchard being released from hospital, which was obviously nice to see. Some more sadder news with Johnny Whiteley's fall. Obviously, he's got a broken femur that broke just after we finished recording last week. The Allens have gone. It's been a pretty hectic week, to be honest.
Well, I think the Allens going is probably the best news of the lot, really, for everyone concerned. I think for them, even for them as well, I think they obviously, I think they were starting to realise that they couldn't go on. He still doesn't get it, does he? I saw him in the paper the other day again saying the name City is irrelevant, and he's still bloody banging on about that. Jesus, mate, that's what screwed you in the first place. You know, just keep your mouth shut. You just leave with whatever dignity you can, what shreds of dignity you can pull around yourself, you know. It'd be interesting to see what happens with this Turkish guy, because obviously he's bought a soccer club, and, you know, hopefully he's done his research and he knows about the SMC and he knows about us and all the rest of it, because you'd hear from to walk through the doors and surprise, you know, there's a rugby league club here as well. So, yeah, let's just see how we go.
Yeah. A few people, obviously, a bit more cautious here and said, you know, is it going to be a case of out the oven in the frying pan? I mean, if you judge him on what we've seen so far, he seems an okay bloke. The Turkish Simon Cowell, that they're calling him. Obviously, it goes without saying, obviously, this is more to do with Hull City than it is to do with Hull FC. But after all, we do share a stadium. And the deal with Hull City obviously includes the Super Stadium Management Company, which obviously affects Hull FC massively. I mean, we did half a podcast on it last year, and, you know, the problems that Hull FC had with the ground and the Elms and what they were doing to the club. So I'd like to think now that it can't be any worse. That's the bottom line here. It can't be any worse than, you know, Assam and Iyabalam. Hopefully that it'll be a fresh appointment, and also you've got to hope that it'll mean that Hull FC don't get ripped off to play at the home ground, because after all, it is a community stadium for the people of Hull. That wouldn't have existed without one or the other. And a point I always like to mention, which is what people fail to realise, is that Hull FC were actually the first club to sign up for the tenancy. So it's as much ours as it is theirs, and it always has been, it always will be.
And yeah, absolutely. And the terms of our rent as well were very heavily stacked in our favour. I think when a few people looked over the thing afterwards, Shane Richardson did a hell of a job negotiating us the best possible deal.
Yeah, that's true. It was a good bloke, Shane Richardson, for actually. He had his moments where he, I think it was a tough ship to steer, wasn't it, after what happened with obviously Gateshead and the shenanigans in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, he inherited an absolute basket case. And, you know, the Gateshead thing had obviously had failed. And when he came down with, you know, without being horrible, a real ragtag bunch of journeyman Aussies, really, that came down. Added to that was the players that were still under contract for us and also have the best of our youth, you know, so your Horns and your Cooks and your Pouches and your Parkers and your Fletchers and your Kings. Sean McRae had to kind of meld that into some sort of working unit, you know. And as well as that, you had a dilapidated, horrible, falling down bloody boulevard. You had probably one of the worst changing rooms, dressing sheds in the league, especially the away one. They inherited an absolute basket case. And for, you know, for within 2 or 3 years of him walking through the door, for us to be running out in a brand spanking new stadium was nothing short of miraculous.
Absolutely. And you look at the attendance rise, going from 6,000-7,000 to mandatory five-figure crowds and averages of 12 and 13, and at the peak 14, which is pretty incredible. You think we've pretty much doubled your gate. And obviously the rise of Hull FC at the KCOM Stadium is no coincidence, because 2005 Challenge Cup, 10 years later, another two Challenge Cups. Obviously, a Super League force now and again. Obviously, not as much as we've all wanted over the past 20 years. I think every Hull FC fan will admit that. But we've had one or two flashes in the pan. Unfortunately, that's all it's been. But yeah, the point here is that it's as much our ground as it is Hull City's. And hopefully, this bloke will realise that. Like you just said, he's come through the door. Oh, there's a rugby league club. But he should know that, hopefully. You'd like to think that Adam Pearce and James Clark will be meeting him in the near future. Obviously, there'll be more pressing matters like the head coach at Hull City right now, who they're going to sign in the football January transfer window. But you'd like to think Hull FC will be a point that'll come to and be discussed. And because they've got to get that right, that relationship, because we don't want to be whinging, saying, oh, yeah, we're hindered on the salary cap, or we're hindered because of this and this and that, and the SMC aren't doing this, and they're not letting us open the upper tier for a derby game, or they're not letting us sell the last two blocks of the East Stand, which has really infuriated fans. That obviously had to move from the East Stand reserve towards the North Stand to the South Stand, or move to a different stand, and that really, you know, peed a lot of people off. So just little things like that, you know, getting them back is pretty crucial. It sounds petty, but they are important little things.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm really cleaning the place before we use it. That'd be nice.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, but one thing I will say, that this guy does look like a bit of a man of action. If he has sacked McCann this morning, as the reports seem to suggest, and there's this guy coming in from outside, and then apparently City is still under a transfer embargo because of some dodgy dealings that happened last year with a loan player. He's already said he'll pay that off. It's about $100,000 fine to the EFL. He'll pay that off, and then they're looking at, before the end of the January transfer window, they're looking at three or four players totaling about $10 million. So, I mean, he's really putting his money where his mouth is early. Let's see if he is a man of action. Let's see where that leaves us.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, if he's a real man of action and he doesn't want us there, fine, mate, build us another stadium.
Yeah.
If you've got that much money, build us a stadium.
Yeah,
no problem. We'll never darken your doors again.
Pie in the sky stadium talk, you've got to love it. But yeah, it's funny because midweek you did mention me, oh yeah, how about Costello Field? Come on, Mr. Akon, or whatever he's called. One thing you can say about this Turk is he's a big football fan. He does love his football. You can see that just from looking on his social. There's, you know, he's a big Fenerbahce fan. Obviously, one of the football clubs in Istanbul. Obviously, he's come. He said he'd dream to own a British football club. Obviously, that's happened now. You know, and you see, obviously, good luck to him. You hope it works, and you hope he is a football man. Because if he is a football man, that means he's come here for the right reasons. You'd like to think that will benefit Hull FC. And like you say, if he likes his football, he also loves his basketball. Why not rugby league?
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, time will tell. Time will tell. You know, me and you can wax lyrical for hours and hours and hours about what might happen. It's going to be one of those where we're just going to have to wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed. Hull FC matters then. Luke Gill announced as the club captain for 2022. I am more than happy with this. I think it's a great appointment. One thing I will say is I saw some people saying, oh, isn't it a bit of a disrespect to players that have been here for a few years? You know, don't they earn the right to be captain before a bloke who's just come in? And I'm thinking, Gareth Ellis? Do people's memories that short?
Your halfback should be a captain. If you've got a vociferous, organising halfback, he's got to be captain.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, what are you going to do? You know, and you know, who else are you going to give it to? You know, me and you have both said this is the year Danny Houghton's likely to be spelled a lot more than he has been before, so he's not going to be on the pitch a great deal, and he's not really that kind of chatty captain anyway. You don't give it to someone like Connor because that'll work against you. Maybe Carlos, but you know, if in the centres, really, you know, something happens on the opposite wing, is he running across to go and talk to the ref? Probably
is he that
not.
Type of player anyway? Seems pretty
and
quiet to
you
me.
Know, and he's not. Yeah, exactly. He's not that kind of chatty. You know, he goes about his business pretty quietly.
Mm.
Griffin, but he's coming back from a long-term injury. Do you know, who else? You know, you can't give it to a forward, you can't give it to a prop because they're going to be spelled and going to be off the pitch. And then you're looking at a back rower or you're looking at a loose man, you know? Well, no. He's the obvious choice and the right choice, I think.
I completely 100% agree with that. A few people said Manu Mal, but again, he's like that quiet... that quiet beast, didn't he? He'll just get on with his business and do his job. Now, I'm really happy. One thing I do like about it is Luke Gayle will hold people accountable, and that's been missing. Look at Danny Houghton, and it's a point you made in one of your podcasts that we did at the back end of last year. And you're looking at the leadership group that we highlighted, your Scott Taylors, your Mark Schneider, Danny Outens, even your Maya Finoza, if you want to go that far. You're a senior player at that club, you're lead, you know, a part of that leadership group, and you're saying to your players, come on, this isn't good enough. They're looking at you thinking, look at yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
With Luke Gayle, I don't think you're going to get that, because he's going to lead that team around the field. He's going to be the most vocal player on that field. He will, like I say, he'll steer us around. He'll produce all our attacking plays. He'll get us on that park. He'll, you know, get us up that pitch. And no, I think it's an exciting appointment. And like I say, that accountability thing, I think is huge, because we haven't had that. And I think Luke Gayle will give us that, because he, you know, he's not part of the Jobs for the Boys mantra or anything like that. And it just feels fresh. And again, it's a decision made by Brett Hodgson. That's gone away from what we've seen in recent history. It's a completely different narrative. I'm really happy with it, really content with it. Well, more than content. I'm very pleased with it, if I'm being honest. He's come in. All the voices have been absolutely superb. I mean, you've had players, Jake Connor talking him up. Obviously, you said last week that Connor was a big reason that Luke Gill's even a Hull FC player. But yeah, he seems to have come in, not shut up all the time. He's been here. He seems to have been leading, you know. Obviously, talking to people, you know, even, dare I say, coaching people as well. I mean, that's been, that'll be on his mind, obviously. He's at the last stages of his career. Yeah. He already runs a halfback academy for young players. So, you know, who knows what will happen. But yeah, I'm really excited by that appointment. I think it's a great move.
Yeah, me too. And like you said, leading by example, you're always going to get 100% with Gayle, always. The other thing as well is that him being captain can only help like a Ben McNamara or, you know, someone like that, you know, a young Hookham or someone like that coming up as a bit of a playmaker, because you've got the guy there who's leading by example, leading the team around the pitch, and then being the voice of the team on the pitch as well. Yeah, absolutely, mate. It's a no-brainer for me. And I'm glad that we've got a head coach that isn't bowing to player pressure and isn't bowing to, oh, well, you know, I'll have to give it to Danny because Danny's a legend of the club and blah, 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 blah. No, bullshit, you know? We give it to the right player for the job, regardless of history or how long he's been at the club. If he's the right man, he's the right man.
Yeah, and from a Danny Houghton point of view, right, can he just concentrate on his own game now? Because he hasn't got that pressure of being Hull FC captain. Yeah. He doesn't have to deal with rest. He doesn't have to, you know, deal with the squad, if you like. He can just concentrate on producing the best he possibly can this year at hooker. In theory, that can only be a good thing.
Yeah. No, agreed.
Obviously, and he needs a big year, it goes without saying. Especially, obviously, Hull FC have been in Loughborough University this past week, finished with a training match, 30 minutes each way, so not really a proper game, but something a little bit more than an unopposed or a team run against London. They won 26-0, tries from Josh Griffin, Carlston with Harvey, Andrea Savelio, Joe Lovajua, and young Harvey Baran. Obviously, the name I'm looking at there is Lovajua. Hull FC, we're doing social media updates at the weekend, and he scooted over. Wow, a Hull FC hooker scooted from acting half and scoring. I had to go for a little bit of a lie down after I read that.
We haven't had one of them since probably Jeremiah.
Yeah, literally. Yeah, very exciting. Obviously, Litton had a scoot in him, but it wasn't dangerous near the line. He didn't have the power to go over, bless him. But yeah, this is obviously, it's a player I don't know. You know him more than me, but I'm very excited to see what this bloke can do next year. I mean, he looks trim as well, doesn't he? You look at all the pictures of him and little bits of videos that we've seen, and he looks in really good nick. And yeah, like I say, if he gets the lion's share of the hooker and if he earns that this year and comes on and gets better and better as the year goes on, then we could have an absolute steal here.
He's tall as well. He's very much, if you're thinking of hookers, Hull hookers of the past, he's not a Mike Dixon or a Danny Houghton or a Jez Litton. He's a Lee Jackson. He's tall, lean, you know, could quite easily step up to 13 if he needed to. And in the same way that Lee Jackson could. But yeah, he's very, very, very quick around acting halfback. It'll be very interesting to see how they line up first game, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll obviously get more of an indication to that. It's Leeds this coming weekend, Sunday the 30th. Looking forward to that. Obviously, always a good trip to Headingley. It's a good away day, obviously, for pubs and bars. Not obviously that I'm swayed by things like that, you know, obviously. But dry January, what's that?
Well, yeah. Original Oak, Skyrack, which one do you go to?
Skyrack sometimes, yeah. And there's a little Indian that we like as well, which is, a proper curry. So, yeah, all bodes well for Sunday. I'm looking forward to
it. Very nice.
obviously the try scorers, goes without saying, the first one, Josh Griffin, first game back. I know it's not a copy game, but still it's better than training, and it's just good to see him on the score sheet, because, you know, it's all the cliches, isn't it? But Achilles injury like that, you're out for pretty much a year. There's no secret. Josh Griffin was very open about it, that mentally as well as physically, you know, the emotions that came with that. It was a horrible, horrible, horrible injury. And to get a try, and then not just that, the opening try in your first game back after, what, a few minutes of playing, it must have been absolutely buzzing.
Yeah, and like exactly what you said there, mate, you know, there's the physical injury, but then there's the confidence and the mental side of it as well. You know, can you push? Can you step? Can you accelerate? Can you stop quickly? You know, all of these things go through your mind, and no amount of training actually will replicate an actual match, you know, and the decisions you're making when you're slightly fatigued and stuff. So it's good for him to get that under his belt and to score the first try. Very, very heartening indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, good to see, obviously, Carlos getting over Harvey Barran and Andre Sevilla too, which obviously boosts their confidence, and obviously they'll hope to tip that into the Leeds game at the weekend. But yeah, it sounded a beneficial week. It's a good stage of pre-season to do something like that. And I just thought that it works, you know, a bit of time together, you know, not just at training, but off, you know, after training as well, socialising, you know, team bonding and what have you. And yeah, just sounds like a really good, solid week. Hopefully that'll put us in good stead for the start of the season. I mean, again, last week you played up the importance of a good start, and no one will deny that. But, you know, we've got to get better and better as the year goes on. I know I'm just repeating myself from last week, but it all bodes well what we've seen so far in pre-season. And I am looking forward to the year. That goes without saying. What will happen, as always, who knows? But we seem to be doing everything right at the moment. That's the good thing here.
Yeah, it's the little 1%ers again, isn't it? Which we talked about a few years back, which is we just seem to be getting the little bits right, you know. You know, like you said, naming the captain, going down and doing the Loughborough thing, which, you know, would have cost the club a little bit of money, but doing it properly, you know, we're kind of doing our business quietly. You know, we're not going out like Leeds did at the weekend and having a massive, you know, big thing against Bradford and, you know, 7,500 people watching it and all the rest of it. We're doing nice and quiet. And, you know, that's a good thing. Like what you said last week, you know, no one said anything about top five. No one said anything about where we're going to finish in the league. We're just doing it nice and quietly. We're managing the expectations.
Yeah, long may that continue, because I am sick of hearing the word silverware and failure. And it just makes us, just leaves us with a leg on our face. Yeah. You know, the owner has finally learned some lessons here. He's been very quiet, and even his membership letter, it was all about the support. It was all about thanking us as members for what we've done over the past 2 years. It wasn't, oh, we're going to rip it up again, oh, we're going to win this and we're going to do all that. I think it was much more measured, and it was just, I appreciated that much more, you know, just a bit of honesty saying, yeah, we know where we're at, we know we need to get better, we will, and we've done this, we've done that, you know, we've brought this player in, we've got rid of this player, you know, we're trying, we're getting there. And we do know that it's going to take another winter to really sort out the problems there. But, you know, I think, we like you say, we haven't made the right decisions all the way since Wakefield away at the end of our season. We've, you know, we've got rid of the players we needed to get rid of that we could have. We've brought in who we could have, and we're making the right noises in pre-season. And, I'm pretty content with, obviously, how that's going there. Just one more thing on the Luke Gale point. I've got to mention this out. I want to meet up the cream sellers, Tom. His nan put on social media, well done, Gailey. He's always been assistant ref on the pitch anyway, so why not be captain?
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, case closed there. Absolutely. Just touch on Johnny Whiteley. Obviously, that news was, obviously never nice to see a 91-year-old fall, but a broken femur. That sounds, it doesn't sound great, does it? But, you know, we all know Johnny Whiteley is tough as nails, and, you know, he doesn't know how to back down, does he? So obviously we wish him a speedy recovery. I'm sure he'll be back up on his feet in no time.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And, all our best wishes go to Johnny, who he kind of transcends the term legend of a club. He's more than that. He is the club. You know, he's lived, breathed, bled black and white. And long may that continue.
Absolutely. Don't want to give anything of the fanzine away these days, but obviously the December issue was a... who me and my old man consider the 20 greatest ever Hull FC players from 1895 right up to the present day. Let's just say Johnny Whiteley was right up there.
Can we do a worst one as well? Can me and you do a worst one?
I reckon it would be filled up with players from the mid to late 90s, but yeah, it's good. Yeah, although Hutch Maiva might give them a run for the money.
Hutch Maiva, Ryan Benjafield and Philly Saru on the wing.
Yeah, that could be an entertaining podcast, saying actually things are actually that bad. Remember who we have had. But, yeah, maybe one day in the future. Dear. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, to finish off on things that have obviously happened this week. The John Player Special Trophy. The only time Hull FC won it was January the 23rd, 1982. Exactly 40 years to the day. Obviously, Ronnie Wildman's Rocket Ronnie try when he picked up the ball, ran down the blind side. No one had a clue. And before the Rovers players turned around and realised what had happened, he pretty much scored in the corner. I mean, yeah, brilliant little move. And Charlie Stone, the only captain to be ever sent off, but still go up to receive the trophy after the game. Yes. So, yeah.
True.
And obviously it was against that lot over the river, so that's always nice.
Even better. Yeah, exactly, even better. Interesting team we put out that day as well, because we had a lot of injuries. This was the 81-82 season, so I think we finished second in the league and then we won the cup at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, the team we put out, Kemble had played every game of the season up to that point, was injured. So Barry Banks was our fullback that day. Now, you know, I think he probably only played half a dozen matches for all the fullback. He was a centre. Chris Harrison was one of the centres. Our halfbacks that day were Terry Day and Tony Dean. You know, Topless was injured more or less three quarters of the season that year, and Kevin Harkin was on the bench. So Terry Day and Tony Dean were our halfbacks. You know, Norton at loose man with Mick Crane and Lee Crooks in the second row, with a front row of Skerritt, Wildman and Stone. Jesus, that's frightening, that. What a pack.
Yeah.
That's a pack and a half. That makes up for the fact that you've got probably your second string halfbacks and a bit of an unsettled back line. But you look at the Rovers, you know, the Rovers were at more or less full strength. Hartley and Harkin at halfback and you know, Steve Crooks who ended up at Hull at one prop and Roy Oldstock at the other. That's a hell of a pack for them as well, with Phil Lowe and Len Casey. Hell of a two. That was the absolute golden era, wasn't it? When Hull and Rovers were the best two teams in the world of rugby league. You know, there were players sat on the bench that would have been first team regulars and superstars at other clubs, for both clubs.
You know, just
fantastic. And for us to win that, and like you say, with that amazing try, Ronnie Wildman down the blind side. And I don't care what you say, he did bounce that ball when he put it down as well. 100% he dropped that ball, but that's all good. We'll take it. But yeah, what a game.
Yeah, no one likes video referees anyway, so I don't think no one really cares. I'm sure there's a few bitter people on the eastern side of the River Hull, but you know, we just think...
Yeah, no, we don't want it anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't want it anyway. There was only one try scored in the entire game.
Yeah, the rest were penalty goals.
That was that one.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. Crooksy scored four, I think. And I think there was a... Because it was back in the days of three-point tries still.
Yeah.
So for us to get a round number, because it was 12-4, I think somebody must have kicked a field goal.
Yeah.
Let me have a look. Tony Dane kicked a field goal.
Brilliant.
Yeah. There you go. And you see how Australian I'm getting field goal. I didn't say drop goal.
Oh, it's like you've been watching the NFL.
Sorry.
And I must admit, I did give that a go last night. I watched... Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the Los Angeles Rams, and Brady was he almost did the comeback for Tampa Bay. It's a weird game though. They tackle like rugby players, so it's like they're tackling like rugby players, but they're passing the ball forward. it's weird. It's a weird game to get your head around. And yeah, I enjoyed it, don't get me wrong, but it's nothing on rugby league, is it? And we really do have the best product in the world. I saw these highlight clips that you see on all over social media. And again, an up the cream writer, Trevor Gibbons. A lot of Hull FC fans know Trevor. He's a top bloke, and yeah, put a little retweet of the New Zealand Warriors try where literally, I can't remember who caught it, but literally did a backflip in the air and flicked it out, and Sean Johnson and Sam Tompkins are throwing passes out their ass, and it ends up with Fusatia scoring in the corner. It was an unbelievable try.
It was a great try. And the other one I saw this week as well was the Titans or the... I think it was the Titans when they kicked to the corner and Anthony Don was running full pelt and he just stuck his right mitt out and the ball stuck and he just put it down in the corner.
Oh, yeah, yeah, the one-handed pickup, that was insane.
The one-handed pickup is just amazing.
Yeah.
We really do. We have such an amazing product. We just, you know, it's just not been not being properly marketed, which, you know, hopefully with this Channel 4 thing and getting us live on terrestrial TV might really help.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen the social media promotion in particular has been big with Channel 4. They've stepped it up a bit now for the first game features Warrington. I think the second game is obviously Hull FC and St Helens, isn't it? So
yeah,
we've got a key part to play there. Our first home game of the year live on terrestrial TV. We need to make a good account of ourselves there, absolutely, against, you know, three-peat Super League champions. But yeah, the Channel 4 thing's out, you know, it's brilliant news. Something we didn't mention last week, but it sort of matches what you've got in Australia, haven't you? You've got your Channel 9, which is terrestrial TV, then you've got your Fox, which is our Sky, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Different over here is that Nine have three games around now. They have the Thursday night game, the Friday night game, and the Sunday afternoon, or one of the Sunday afternoon games.
Right.
Whereas then Fox show everything. They show, even the ones that are on Nine, they show them as well. The only thing that Fox aren't allowed to show is State of Origin in the Grand Final, which basically means I have to watch four games a year on Channel 9. The three State of Origins and the Grand Final, because I watch everything else on Fox, because I cannot stand Channel 9's commentary. But that's just me. I just prefer Fox. And Fox have got a thing where they don't show ads during the game, whereas Channel 9 do. Channel 9 just literally cut into the game every time that there's a bloody penalty, every time that there's a goal, every time there's a try, every time a player's down injured, they just cut into it for ads. Whereas Fox don't. Fox will show an ad before the game, they'll show it at halftime, but that's it. So I prefer Fox.
No, that's fair. Obviously, well, it's not a choice. Obviously, over here in the UK, we get watchnrl.com, which is obviously a streaming service provided by Fox. I'm not complaining when you get analysis from Cooper Cronk, Michael Ennis, Greg Alexander. Don't bother me. Obviously, for every Greg Alexander, Cooper Cronk, there is a Steve Roach, but I suppose, like you said to me last year, that's the downside of having every game live.
Yeah, it is. It is, yeah. Yeah, I think the Brayson Astor is the one that kills me. There's actually a Twitter thing that I follow, which is called Shit That Braith Says, which is quite funny. But yeah, and Astor's just as bad. But yeah, look, they've got Andrew Voss, who I consider to be the best rugby league caller in the world. I think he's amazing.
Absolutely.
Best caller.
Yeah, I think everyone in rugby league will maybe testify to that. Definitely. I mean, I remember when he first, well, we'll say when I first really got ahead of him, if you like, was probably the 2013 Rugby League World Cup, which was obviously held in the UK, and Andrew Voss came over. And he did like that food tour of Britain, where he was eating patties in Hull and Wigan kebabs in Wigan, and said he put like 3 stone on, but he had a whale of a tan. But the games I obviously didn't go to, because I went to about 12 games that tournament, but the ones like in, you know, in France, obviously there's a couple in Wales and what have you, I didn't go to them, and if Vossi was calling them, the experience is just better. And this is something Channel 4 have got to get right as well. I think I'm right in saying that the commentators, the hosts, the pundits, the summarisers, whatever you want to call them, I don't think they've all been announced yet. And, you know, that's the thing, because the voices of rugby league are huge. We don't want another Phil Clark. We don't want Barry and Tez. You know, we need, dare I say, someone with a southern accent.
Yeah, actually, that's probably not a bad call. The one that I always thought was a missed opportunity was John Champion, who was kind of the second string rugby league guy at the BBC under Ray French. And whenever there was two games in a weekend, you know, like if there was a Saturday and a Sunday Challenge Cup semi-final or whatever, he'd do one and Ray French would do the other. But he left and went to ITV to do Champions League soccer. And I always thought he was a real loss to the sport, because he was good, John Champion. So, you know, you never know, they might bring someone like that out. I mean, it could be worse. We could be getting John Hellman, bloody thingy that used to do Scrum Down in the 90s. You know, that'd be appalling. But, let's just see who we get. It'd be interesting to see who they're going to pull. Because you wouldn't think, for 10 games a season, that they'd really want to be pulling anyone out of Sky Sports. And no one who works for Sky Sports would really put their hand up and go, yeah, I'll do it. Even though it's terrestrial TV, it's only 10 matches a year. I don't know. It'd be interesting. Interesting.
Absolutely. And obviously, we hope that, you just mentioned the figure, 10 games. You want that to increase as the year goes by. So if it's successful, you know, you want that doubling. What are we, 27 rounds? Yeah, 27 regular Super League rounds. You want one a weekend, really. One a week. You know, it'll be a Thursday night, a Friday night, Sunday afternoon, whatever it is.
You're right. And you know, it just confuses the viewer. If they go, oh, no, there's no game on for this week. It's next week there's a game on for. You know, it's once a fortnight or whatever. It just confuses people.
I think they are the same times, aren't they? I hope I'm right in saying that. They're all Saturday dinner time kickoffs, which I kind of like. But again, I'm looking at me and my mates always talk about this because we're all massive sports fans. You know, we watch cricket, we watch football. And we're thinking, Saturday, 3 p.m, you're either at a live football match, but there's nothing on the TV at that time. You watch, if you're at home and you're not watching football live or cricket live, you're watching Soccer Saturday, you've got the radio on. There's your prime slot, Saturday, 3 p.m, for those that are at football. You know, not everyone goes to football. There's, you know, we're talking rugby league fans here. That, sure, that's your prime slot. Or you look at a Sunday, there's only two top flight games that are played on Sundays, you know, unless obviously teams are playing in the Europa League or if they're played on a Thursday night in the Cup or what have you. Again, that's a slot, surely, thinking, okay, terrestrial TV, maybe a Sunday dinner time or whatever. But yeah, we need to get that right. Interestingly, I said Thursday nights there. I can't stand Thursday night. And our Thursday night of the year is Wigan away. Yeah. Oh, God, I'm looking forward to that.
Well, Saturday afternoon as well, it's actually traditional kind of grandstand, BBC grandstand time, isn't it?
Yeah,
people used to kind of sit and, you know, there was bugger all on, so you'd have to sit through racing from Chepstow and the bloody ping-pong championships or whatever while you're waiting for final score to come on. But, you know, because you're into sport, you'd sit and watch it, or, you know, or it'd be on in the corner of the room while you're doing something else.
Yeah, it's better than talking to the missus, isn't it?
Exactly. So there is that kind of void that's been left since grandstand went, I suppose. Not that I'm really au fait with what's happening on British TV at the moment, because I've been over here for nearly 20 years. But I'd think that would fill a gap.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the TV coverage and also what happens with the World Cup. As well, at the end of the year, every game of the World Cup is broadcast on BBC, which is, you know, while we're on a television crusade here, that is absolutely massive. You just got to hope the tournament actually takes place this year. If Australia can be asked to come over, that'll be absolutely fantastic. You know, there's a big rugby league nerd sat right here that wants to go see Nathan Cleary play rugby league live. I want to see Tonga. I want to see this magnificent Tonga team and go watch them. I want to see Samoa, I want to see the Cook Islands. I even want to go watch Greece. I want to see it all.
yeah, absolutely. And look, it's especially with what's happened at Tonga the last 7 days as well. You know, it'd be a really emotional and a big thing for the island nation of Tonga to actually go out and give a good account of themselves. Given that the last couple of times they've played, they've looked absolutely spectacular. Between them and Samoa, you know, that we've got two absolute powerhouses now. You know, with Fiji getting better and better and better as well. You know, so it'd be interesting to see. New Zealand are going through a bit of a rebuilding phase, I suppose. Australia have hardly played, so that'll be interesting. Yeah. Mal Meninga must basically just be taking money for nothing at the moment.
Well, they've done what they always do, haven't they? They get beat and they forget that International Rugby League exists.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, very true. So you know, be a really good thing. And the really important thing for me as well is that we've already named the next one. So we've committed to the future of it, and the fact that it's going to be in France, and the fact that when they actually announced it, they mentioned the things that had been done to rugby league by the Vichy government actually in the launch. That's a huge step forward.
Yes. Absolutely. I did think of you actually when that got announced there. One of the interested towns and cities is Vichy, and it's thinking, wow, from a historical element, thinking, okay. But yeah, that's another huge thing for the game that, you know, obviously France is on the way up. It's important to mention that this isn't the best spell France have ever had. Of course, they won a test series in Australia in the 50s. They were the best thing in the world back then. So it's not the most glorious era we've ever had, a golden period of French rugby league, but I'd like to say it's on the up again with two sides in Super League. Obviously, Catalans, their success, obviously a cup win 4 years ago, a League Leaders' Shield win last year. It's obviously Toulouse's promotion. You'd like to think that the game in France will only get better, and obviously a stronger game in France, obviously two French teams in Super League, hopefully means a better France team. It didn't pan out like that in the international at the end of the year, but you've got to persevere with them and not just play them once every so often and, like you say, the complete half-assed attitude that we seem to have with International Rugby League. If it's done properly, then I actually do think there's potential there for it to grow. But yeah, 2025 in France is exciting as well. And you'd like to think the calendar in between the two World Cups will be exciting as well.
Yeah, you've got to hope. And look, you know, I think the way things are going, I think COVID, we have to learn to live with it, no matter what your politics about COVID are, or whatever your views of COVID are. I think the reality is that we're having to live with it. And I think borders will start to ease, even though at the moment Australia is basically a plague island and no one's coming anywhere near us. You know, the EU this morning came out and said that Australia are a COVID danger zone. So that's one thing, but that'll pass because it has to pass. The other thing is as well, I think without getting too deep into Australian politics, there's likely to be a change of government this year as well, which will probably mean that we're a little bit more open and that we will be a little bit more outward thinking, which then I think just basically, I reckon the Rugby League World Cup will go ahead as planned this time. I think last time around, there was a little bit of silly business that was going on there. I think Australia were never really going to come, and they were always going to just quietly have that conversation, but then the Rugby League World Cup people came out and said, no, it's definitely still going ahead, which was news to the Australian Rugby League fraternity, so they had to actually then come out and refute it, and they were made to look like the bad guys. So there was a little bit of there's still a little bit of ill feeling, I think, from the Australian side of things to International Rugby League. But you're right, it's important and it's essential for the game that it goes ahead and is successful.
Absolutely. Interesting you mentioned the words, you know, made to be feel like the bad guy there, because I've, you know, read about the World Cup challenge this year between St. Helens and Penrith Panthers, and obviously when Penrith won the grand final last year, I'm thinking, I'm going to get to see Penrith in St. Helens next year. I'm going to get to see Jerome Luai, you know, Dylan Edwards, Stephen Crichton, Nathan Cleary, James Fisher-Harris, Happy Corrissau. This is amazing. And then, you know, St. Helens are blaming Penrith for not wanting to play it. Penrith are blaming St. Helens for not coming over. Oh, we didn't get their emails, or we didn't see this. You know, it's embarrassing. It's like prime proper rugby league. This is why we've been a laughing stock for 125 years. You're thinking,
well, I'm glad you've told me, because there's been nothing in the Australian press at all.
Don't that say it all, though?
Nothing.
Why isn't there? I mean, obviously, why haven't Australia mentioned it? Do they actually care? I mean, obviously, I know.
Nothing has been said.
I find that astounding, to be honest. I mean, it should be a massive event, the World Cup Challenge, and yep. You know, just for them to, it's like two clubs being on a schoolyard playing field. Oh no, he did it. No, he did it. Get your acts together. I'm really disappointed in Penrith. I mean, it's not like the UK is, like you say, the plague island that it was 2 years ago. That's Australia now. I think we're doing pretty well.
you take the
torch now. But yeah, I think the UK is obviously, we are still a basket taste, don't get me wrong. We always will be, as Boris Johnson's the Prime Minister. But we're getting there. You know, I won't say we're doing all right, but we're a lot better than we were this time 2 years ago. And there's no reason why it couldn't have gone ahead. No reason at all. And I just think it's disappointing, but it's just typical rugby league. You know, you look at what happened in the darts over Christmas. It was absolutely outstanding entertainment. And then you think, oh, rugby league, oh, the latest soap opera, the World Cup challenge, it going ahead again because two teams can't even communicate properly. And then I say that, who does the responsibility here fall on? Is it Super League? Is it the NRL? Is it both? Whose responsibility is this? And why is, again, I said the word with that we've got at Hull SC now, with Luke Gill being captain. Where's the accountability for these people now with the World Cup Challenge? I just think it's embarrassing. It's just another, you know, as I say all the time, it's another horrendous chapter in the horrendous administration of rugby league.
Yeah, it is, yeah. And that's, you know, that's always the thing, isn't it, is that if we had administrators that were as good as the product, we would be the biggest sport in the world. Simple as.
Well, yeah, I always say that because, like I say, it is the greatest game. Entertainment-wise, nothing compares to it. When it's played at its peak and when it's played properly in the right way, which is what we want to see at Hull FC this year. We want to see Jake Connor, you know, his boxer tricks. We want to see, you know, our two fires on the wings. We don't want to hear about grinds and grit and, you know, and what's the word that the players have started using on post-match interviews? Grind. It's like, wow. Wow, wait to talk up the game. Oh yeah, we got into the grind. Oh, cheers, lads. I can't wait to tune in next weekend. But, yeah, when it's played right, we have got the best game in the world. And I say, we've got so much potential to have huge events and make them massive events with, you know, the best players in the world, which is in this case we would have got best of Super League, best of NRL. Obviously, I know in comparison, NRL's the English Premier League and Super League's the, you know, the Uzbekistan League. But even still, it would, you know, you'd like to think that Penrith being in a lot less of a stage in pre-season than St Helens, who have probably already played a couple of Super League games, they would have been a lot far on, which makes it more competitive. Because
I don't know if I've ever actually broached this subject in a podcast. I think me and you might have had a bit of a chat about it before, but when I was working for Balmain Leagues Club, which was basically the West Tigers, and we won the comp in 2005, the Tigers went over to, it had been Bradford 2006 for the World Club Challenge. And I remember talking to a couple of the directors, and they said, it is all set up for the British club to win. For a start, I think Bradford had already played a league match, and then had a break for the, they might have even played two, and then had a break for the World Club Challenge. So they were kind of battle-hardened and were match fit, whereas it was slap bang in the middle of pre-season for West Tigers. The game was played in an English winter, which again is alien to most of the players playing for the West Tigers. Then they were only given enough funding by the International Rugby League and the NRL and Super League to go over for 7 days, and they weren't allowed to play a pre-match friendly against anyone else. They were only given economy class flights. They weren't given first class or business class flights. They were only given one room between two players, and the players were all bunking and sharing rooms. And also, they weren't given very good facilities either. They were given, I think, Leeds training facilities, which at the time were pretty nasty and horrible. So it was all set up for the British team to actually win. So the Australian teams that have gone over there and have actually won have got my absolute admiration, because the Tigers went over there and Bradford beat them. And it was a bit of a ragtag Tigers team as well. I don't think Benji went. I think he was recovering from a close-season operation, and I think even Scott Prince didn't go. I think we had a reserve six and a reserve seven went over. But it's all set up for the English side to win. So when you hear that Penrith have kind of gone, oh no, I'm not really sure, and everything, especially with COVID at the moment being probably more prevalent over here than it is over there, you know, it's just put your big boy pants on and go and bloody do it. You know, it gets on my nerves.
Yeah, because really, we both want the best for the game. You know, I'm not just all their food fans, we both rugby league nerds. You know, I want the best for it. I want to see it prosper. I don't want to see it, you know, horrendously administrated and, you know, with poor decisions and made to be looked like it's amateur, which at times it is, isn't it? It's frustrating. And I saw a couple of Aussie people, I mean, that league freak was piping up having to go to St Helens all the time. Ironically, he did say proper clubs come over, and even included Hull in that. Obviously, we came over for St George, didn't we? I mean, what the best 2 weeks you've ever had in Australia, arguably. obviously, they, you know, we did that. Obviously, Wigan did it. They played South, but they've also done it for the World Cup Challenge. They've done it twice, actually. They went to Brisbane and beat them, didn't they, as well? So it's disappointing also from St Helens' point of view, thinking, okay, right, if Penrith are absolutely adamant that they're not coming, right, why don't you do all you can to go over there and go to Penrith and go play in, you know, a suburban ground where you've always talked them up on this podcast, and obviously, you know, clearly in print about how good the suburban grounds are. Go and experience it.
Yeah, go to Leichhardt Oval, go to Manly's ground, go to, you know, the new Shark Park that's getting built, you know, just, yeah, spectacular. Yeah.
This is the last chance you've got to do it anyway, because Penrith are getting a new ground for 2023 and beyond that. It just winds you up, though, that there's no mutual body to make. Like, there's no prominent, like, football have FIFA, they have UEFA. There's no prominent governing body, or there doesn't seem to be anyway in Rugby League. Obviously, I know we've got the Rugby League International Federation, and we've got other organisations that exist but don't really do anything. But there should have been more happened to ensure that game took place.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. Yeah.
So while we're on this rugby league journey, then, we mentioned Channel 4, we've done the World Cup, we've done the World Cup Challenge. Why not have a little talk about the NRL? What's been going on?
What hasn't been going on? there's been quite a lot going on at the moment. I suppose the one that's come out is Simpkins, who's the one of the reserve second row forwards at the Tigers, crashed his car with people in it a couple of days ago and did a runoff on the scene. I'm not going to cast aspersions, but that does sound like someone quite recently in red and white colours that did very similar things, didn't it? Let's not go any further into that, because I think that's still probably before a judge and I don't want to get sued. But that's just happened today. Obviously, the big thing here is what's going on with the new club, with the Dolphins. And they've actually had a couple of players commit to them now for next year, which is good. The problem we've got, if we're looking for a player next year, is that now there's an extra club over here that are looking for players, and they seem to be signing some fairly decent ones as well. Currently, actually, committed to them for 2023, Jesse Bromwich, Jermaine Osaka, Felice Kafusi, Mac Nichols signed this morning from South, Ray Stone, and Tafare as well, Valence Tafare from the New Zealand Warriors. They've now got five or six players under contract, and obviously anyone that's out of contract next year is looking off the shoulder to see if that's what's going to happen, and they're going to end up going there. They seem to be signing older players. There's a few veterans, I suppose you'd call them. Someone did say they'll have a bit of a dad's army pack next year. Bromwich and Kafusi and Nichols are all over 30. So that's going to be interesting to see how they stand up to a full season. But they're by no means finished their business yet. And Wayne Bennett is going to be a very wily coach for them. Very wily indeed.
Be interesting to see if they fill the... That. Sorry, just saying, it'd be interesting to see if they fill the roster with local Queensland players, young players, if they've got the experience elsewhere, give youth in that region a chance. And this is the whole point of having a second Brisbane team, is the fact that there's supposed to be all this talent there.
Kind of isn't it? Kind of isn't. It's not as parochial as it is in the UK. There'll be teams that, South will champion the fact that they've got, this guy's a South junior or whatever. The Roosters will steal South juniors and call them Roosters juniors and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, most of the big name Queensland players that have made a name for themselves in the last couple of years have been playing for the Storm, because the Storm have had, a roots up in Queensland getting the best of the youth. In fact, they've completely undercut the Broncos. Cam Smith never played for a Queensland team. He's a Queensland legend. Billy Slater, the same. They're all Queenslanders. Cooper Cronk, Queenslander. All played for the Storm. So, that's kind of the way things have been. Now, you would think, obviously because he's going to be a second team in Brisbane, that, Brisbane will be looking over the shoulder and everything. But, their squad for this year, it doesn't look too bad. And obviously, the big gain for them is Adam Reynolds from South. The halfback is going to be very interesting to see how he performs in another team, because obviously he's been at South all his career apart from now. But apart from that, they've really signed no one. They've got Kurt Capel from the Panthers, Ryan James from Canberra Raiders, but he's 30-odd. They've lost a few players as well. Pangai Jr. has gone to the Bulldogs via Penrith. Milford's gone to the Bunnies. Xavier Coates has gone to the Storm. They've lost Brody Croft to Salford. There's actually a bit of movement there. Be interesting to see how they go. I don't think they're going to hit the eight, the Broncos, this year. I think when I did my predictions for Up the Crane, I haven't put a Queensland team in the top eight again. The Titans. Did I put the Titans in? I'm not sure. Let's have a look. I've got it to hand here. Yeah, I did. I put the Titans in. The Titans are the only Queensland team I put in my top eight prediction. I don't think the Broncos will get there. Other news, I suppose. I think this is the year that Canberra Raiders really drop off. They've re-signed a lot of old players. I can't see them really doing much this year better than they did last year. And last year, they really did flat to deceive. I think this could be the year that their coach, Ricky Stewart, kind of exits stage left. I can't see him hitting the eight this year. And if they don't, he's gone. And they've lost a few players as well. Saliva Avili's gone to the Bunnies. I really thought Hull might make a play for him when we were looking for a hooker, but obviously we went the Lovadua route. But, you know, we've lost a few. They've lost a few players. Bailey Simonson has gone to the Eels, which is a big loss for them. He was a really good winger. And they haven't really picked anybody up, apart from probably Nick Kotrick, who left them last year and had a particularly unsuccessful season at the Bulldogs last year and has gone back home. Talking of the Bulldogs, yeah, interesting. They've gone out with a more or less a blank checkbook, and they've just gone out and signed player after player after player. You know, Matt Burton from the Panthers, Ado Carr from the Storm, Naden from the Panthers, Duffy from the Dragons, Paul Vaughan from the Dragons, Tevita Pangai Jr., Braden Burns from the Bunnies. They've really gone out and signed a lot of players. The problem is the fish rots from the head, and they've still got a terrible coach in Trent Barrett, who I don't think would win anything, ever. It's going to be really on Trent Barrett this year, because now we've got Gus Gould as a director of football above him. He's going to have his fingers in everything, Gus Gould, and I can't see Barrett lasting a season.
It's interesting you say, you know, every time we rant and talk about Trent Barrett, and when obviously the shortlists would come up after Lee Radford left the LFC in 2020, Trent Barrett was always a name, and it's scary thinking that he could have ended up being at Hull, and you think of the car crash at that Canterbury, well, they were before he arrived, but what they are now, it doesn't seem to be getting any better, despite, you know, a pretty decent recruitment drive, obviously, last season. And if it doesn't improve this year, like you see with the names that they've signed, then he's going to be shown the door. They have to, don't they? I mean,
they've absolutely backed him, mate. You know, you're talking, he's let players go. You know, you know, Nick Meaney's gone to the Storm. Kotrick, they'd released after a year when he was their high-profile signing last year. Hopewati, a bit of a legend of the club's, gone to St Helens. They released him a year early, even though he was under contract. You know, they've gone out and bought Burton, best young halfback, you know, probably one of the best young halfbacks of the generation. Ado Carr, fastest winger in the game. Dufty, fastest fullback in the game. You know, Tevita Pangai Jr., absolute devastating prop, second row forward. You know, Josh Cook from the Rabbitohs, really good player. They've really backed him. They've really, really, really backed him. The problem they've got is from halfback, Kyle Flanagan, you know, was one of their major signings last year, and he's never really done it. So Flanagan and Burton together as a halfback pairing is going to be very, very interesting. Obviously, their other one that they had that was a halfback that was doing quite well was Lachlan Lewis, but then he got done for stealing a speaker that belonged to the NRL and trying to sell it on eBay.
Oh, dear me. NRL players never change.
Oh, they never change. I mean, talking of halfbacks, the interesting one for me, being a Tigers supporter, is what's going to happen at the Tigers this year. Because, you know, Luke Brooks, I think this is the last year he's under contract. There's still a chance that he'll end up at Newcastle, because Newcastle are absolutely desperate for a halfback after Mitch Pearce left, because that really wasn't in their they weren't expecting that to happen, I don't think. And then when Pearce said, look, I can give you back $1 million a year in salary cap, and, you know, I can go right now, they kind of went, oh yeah, absolutely. But then they've only got juniors to fill the boots. So Luke Brooks is obviously been on the nose a little bit at the Tigers, and it'd be interesting to see whether they think that he's the long-term answer at Newcastle. If he's not, obviously, then Luke Brooks and Jackson Hastings, that's going to be a very interesting halfback pairing at the Tigers, with Adam Dewey probably dropping back to fullback rather than playing six. Or maybe even Adam Dewey playing in the centres, because they've got a half-decent fullback there with... his name is, I can't remember his name of the fullback, but
kid from Penrith, Dane Laurie,
yeah, sorry, who played very well last year. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens there. It'd be interesting to see how Oliver Gildart does as well there, because, you know, he's a good player, but you can't really name many backs from Super League that have actually gone out and made a massive success.
I think he'll be one of the Wigan kids that go over there and he'll be back within 6 to 12 to 18 months with a tail between the legs. You know, we've seen plenty of them.
The old damn, I'm homesick for Wigan defence.
I missed the Wigan kebab, I missed the pie. stuffed in a bread cake and stuffed in deep fried batter, whatever it is. It sounds absolutely incredible.
It does actually sound really good. I'm mouth-watering. There's not much I miss about the UK, but a good Cornish pasty, a good Scotch egg, and a good pie. Probably three of the things that I do miss. Other teams to watch out for, I suppose. I mean, be interested to see what happens with the Storm. Because of what's happened there in the close season with, you know, players getting, you know, caught on camera with a white substance on the table in front of them, you know, and Brandon Smith then coming out and saying, oh, you know, there's a real drinking culture there and really visibly shopping himself around other clubs. Well, you know, yeah, you've signed for the Roosters, mate, but you're not there until the season after. Yeah. You're not there until the 2023 season, so... He's going to have to play against. He's going to play with players that he's thrown under the bus, which is going to be an interesting thing for him to actually, you know, to actually have to deal with. Because it's not. That's not an interesting. It's one of those Storm or they're a little city state all to themselves. You know, they're the only team in Victoria, they're the only team down in Melbourne. They've got this real core of players that they're very insular. And for someone to actually come out in the press and say something about the club is very, very unusual. I wouldn't be surprised if Brandon Smith left halfway through the season if they can negotiate a release for him. I think they will see him as a cancer in the team. And it looks to me very much like Harry Grant is going to be their hooker going forward, which isn't a bad thing. Problem with Harry Grant is he's got to keep fit because he's had problems with his hamstrings and stuff. Mm. But Brandon Smith will probably be, I reckon, surplus to requirements halfway through the year. Be interesting to see what happens to Storm, because you got to remember they won the League Leaders Trophy last year. You know, and with the end of the season, we're top of that league, but then obviously didn't fire in the finals. So it'd be interesting to see what they do. Penrith as well.
That was a belting game. Sorry, that preliminary final between Melbourne and Penrith. That was one of the best games of the league I've ever seen.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that was the game where the only 20-40 of the game was kicked when Brandon Smith kicked it, and your fullback just let it sail into touch because I reckon he'd completely forgotten that the rule existed.
So did I.
Yeah, exactly. It was brilliant. I loved it. Teams that I think will go backwards this year, I think the Eels will go backwards. I think Manly will go backwards. I think they're over-reliant on Trbojevic. And, you know, when he played last year, you know, the fact that he was like the top try scorer in the league or one of the top try scorers in the league and he only played 10, 15 games or whatever was just stupid. Mm. But they're so heavily dependent on him staying fit. That if he has an injury or they have a run where he's a little bit out of form, I can't see them doing much. The other news with Manly, of course, is that your friend and mine, Marty Tapau, is in the last year of his contract. I mean, he'll be 34 next year, but he would still absolutely rip it up in Super League. I wouldn't be surprised if he was one that the Dolphins were looking at just for a season to finish his career up there. The point with Marty Tapau is that I think if Manly could get rid of him this year, they'd probably allow him to leave. And that's no reflection on him as a player. I just think that they're looking at him going, he's a 33-year-old forward. We've got better options in our train and trial players and in our pre-season train-on squad and everything. We can probably promote two or three young players for the amount of money that Marty Tapau's on. As a 33-year-old forward, we could probably do without him. So I wouldn't be at all surprised if he was kind of moved on at some point during this season as well. Because they changed the rules in the NRL last year to allow that to happen. So players can move between clubs mid-season, which is what happened with Tevita Pangai Jr. last year when he ended up rocking up at the Panthers.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Obviously, when you say things like that, that means players become available for Super League clubs to poach around as well. And let's think the FC will be having one or two eyes on that, you know, where we want to strengthen. Obviously, we know where we need to strengthen still. We know the players that are likely not to get renewed players that we hope will get renewed beyond 2022, especially if recent form carries on into this year. But obviously, you know, you like to think that your football manager, your CEO, your owners, they all have even your coach, your assistant coach, they all have the eye on the ball and looking at players who become available on both sides of the globe. And obviously, and we mentioned this last week, you know, Hull FC are obviously very, very optimistic about their youth departments at the moment. And One thing we didn't say about the Bradford game, you could, and it was something I saw on Facebook, it was a really, really good analogy, was that basically that game against Bradford was like an open trial for our young players to look, for John Kay to look at in order to see who he wants to pick out for to play on Joe Reggie at Bradford this year. And I thought, yeah, it's not a bad way of looking at it, really. It's pretty rubbish for the fans who paid £15 or £20 on the gate to essentially watch an academy side, but you saw the squad, you know what you're getting in for, so I'll stay on that front. But we know the direction, obviously, like say we're going in with the youth department, and if you are going down that road, then you fill your quality, top quality with your imports, and that's what St Helens have done now with Curtis Surinam, with Will Hoplati, who's come in. Obviously they've had Lachlan Coote recently, Kevin Naguama was outstanding for them. This is what the top sides do. I mean, Wigan don't really do that. I can't really remember the last top quality import they had. I mean, people will say Jackson Hastings, but was he top quality? I don't really think so.
Yeah.
Warrington have infamously done it. They haven't got it right, though, because, like you say, they don't complement that with their players from their system, or even Super League players. That's something we've nailed recently. British signings, you look at Josh Griffin, absolutely outstanding. Yeah. You could argue Andreas Savelyev, when he's fit and firing and not getting racially abused, is outstanding.
You could even argue Josh Jones, because he was a current Great Britain international when we signed him. His head wasn't right and he wasn't the right fit for us, but you could argue that it was the right signing.
We were all buzzing at the time, weren't we?
It just didn't work.
I was very excited about that signing. And there was, he had one moment. I remember the game against Wakefield the week before the first lockdown when the season got postponed. He was outstanding. He was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, he was, yeah.
But unfortunately, like you say, his head wasn't in it. He maybe got swayed by people at home, or, as I say, his family. And that's the thing.
He's probably right that he's ended up at Huddersfield, because that was about as far as he used to get before he decided to turn around and go home.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? So.
Going over the Pennines, it was nosebleed territory for him. Homesickness, altitude sickness, you know, you name it. But
that's, you know what? We're talking about possible signings for next year as well, when we're talking about, you know, getting the very, very best of halfbacks and stuff. These are all ifs. We're looking for a halfback next year. If we are, if he only lasts 1 year, right? So everyone's talking about Jake Truman as a possibility. If we are looking for a halfback next year, but there's a real chance next year that someone the caliber of, a really decent halfback that might just kind of come available. It might be a Luke Brooks from the Tigers that suddenly becomes available, you know, at the end of next year. Now, he's been a good NRL halfback for a long time, but has suffered because he's never actually taken the Tigers into a top eight position. Now, a lot of the blame's fallen on him, probably unfairly, because he's had nothing around him that's helped him. He's never had a pack that's protected him, and you know, he's been a very, very good player for a very, very long time, but he's never quite just taken that next step. Spelling Super League would do him the world of good, and if Hull got him, I would not be unhappy with that at all. I really wouldn't.
I would argue a halfback is a genuine possibility as well, because if Luke Gayland does the year, obviously there's a spot there, but even if Luke Gayle does a second year, who's to say Josh Reynolds will do a third year? There is an option there.
There's an option for six and seven, but
I reckon that option will only be exercised if he plays at least three quarters of the games this year, because it wasn't his fault that he did his knee, it wasn't his fault that he did his hamstring. I mean, he did his hamstring going for that ball against Salford in the second game when he scored the try when, I think it was when Snead put the grubber in, and he goes for it like a lunatic and pulls his hamstring.
That's the issue, isn't it? Is that because he will throw himself into everything, and because he is the chaser of lost causes, you know, 5-6 years ago when he was younger, he could do that. But now he's got to kind of moderate his approach a little bit. And I'm not sure mentally he's kind of got there yet. You know, we've always said, you know, we always use Benji Marshall as an example. He's like, when he lost a yard of pace, he compensated for that by changing his game a little bit. You know, he was still just as quick between the ears, but he wasn't as quick in the legs, so he changed his game. Benji Marshall used to make some appalling errors in games where he would make the wrong decision and run the wrong line, but he was quick enough to get himself out of trouble. The last 5 years of his career, he wasn't quick enough to get himself into trouble, so he chose his runs and he chose when he injected himself into the game better. And that's what Reynolds needs to do now. Is now he's slowing down a little bit, and he has had the odd niggly injury. you know, he needs to not be that chaser of lost causes, and he needs to not, you know, throw himself all over the pitch and you know, and hurt himself. He needs to be a little bit smarter and you know, almost play in a bloody tuxedo, you know, and inject himself into the game where he needs to.
Leon Price mastered it in the latter stages of his career.
Yeah, he did. Yes, yeah, a very good example, mate, yeah.
Albert Kelly didn't, unfortunately. He was, don't get me wrong, Albert Kelly was absolutely outstanding and the best free signing Hull FC will ever get, but
yeah,
obviously the expense of our near neighbours, and that's the novelty of it. It's absolutely sensational because he was phenomenal for us. But he was another one who threw himself into everything but in attack and in defence, and at the detriment of his physical well-being, he picked up injuries from being a lunatic.
Yeah, totally. And look, you've only got to look at what he did last year at the Broncos. You know, pre-season friendly, he nearly lost his ear.
Yeah. But then I suppose that's the way he plays. That's the type of player he is. If you get enough of this move, don't you?
Yeah. That game he played against the Roosters when he scored, and you know, Broncos were so unlucky last year with halfbacks. You know, but when it looked like he was going to come through the middle of it and everything, then he did his leg and he was out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever. And then they lost the little bit of momentum that he'd actually got them. But when he was on the pitch last year, Broncos looked a better team. They really did. It was great to see him bossing an NRL team about. It was so good. And again, you know, because he's not that organisational halfback, he is the chasing halfback. That's why he was so effective outside Snead, because you know you had a general and then a willing lieutenant, you know, which is what we need with next year with Gale and Reynolds. We need a general and a willing lieutenant.
Absolutely. I mean, I suppose the only thing that really I can say is a concern with them two is, are you going to get much pace out of two halfbacks who are obviously, you know, early 30s now?
Getting on.
But then didn't you, over 20, 30 yards, look, Gale, I mean, I still don't see him being a slouch. He's quicker than Snead.
He's not slow.
Snead was slow.
And
Snead didn't have it.
Yeah, exactly. Snead was slow. You know, but I think that the thing is that the way that we're playing, Benji Marshall was always really, really quick, but Scott Prince never was.
Mm.
Right? And if Hodgson's trying to kind of replicate that team that he played in for the West Tigers, which it does seem like he is with the wingers that we're getting and everything, you're going to have good kicking game, and you've got two big, fast centres and two very elusive, quick finishing wingers. And you've hopefully now got a couple of free running loose second rowers, you know, Mau on one side and whoever on the other, hitting good lines and good holes with your centres and your wingers running off them. Do you really need that quicker halfback partnership? I'm not sure you do. You know, I think as long as the kicking game's right, and as long as we're backing up, and as long as we've got a dynamic hooker, which it looks like Lovadua will be if he gets a game, there's a lot to be excited about there, I think. It's going to be very different. It's going to feel different for a couple of games with no Snead there. But, you know, the end of last season and probably for a season and a half before that, Snead was struggling, and he was struggling for identity, and he was struggling for form. And you could always tell there was a couple of games there when he even looked a little bit off colour with the boot, and that was always the bellwether for Snead. If he wasn't kicking well, he knew he wasn't feeling well or playing well, you know. So, you know, I think it's been a win-win-win situation. I think the club are better for it. I think Gale's going to be better in a black and white shirt than he was in a Leeds shirt, and I think Snead will be better in a Salford shirt next year than he was in a Hull shirt. So, you know, I think it'd be interesting to see how we go, but I think it's going to feel very different. I think people need to be prepared for that.
We've been crying out for that, though. We've been crying out for change.
Yeah, we have.
Don't get me wrong, we've not answered all the questions, but we've made a very good start to addressing our problems. That's one thing I'll definitely reiterate time and time again. We know we've still got issues. We haven't solved everything, but we've done a hell of a lot more in the past 4 or 5 months than I thought we'd do. And I'll give the club some credit there. Content is the word.
If I came to you in September last year and I said to you, we're going to have a new halfback, Snead's gone, we get rid of Fanua, and we get a really, you know, and McIntosh is going to be the number one winger.
Mm.
We buy a backup hooker, and we get Kane Evans from the NRL, who's a big roughed-up prop. You'd snap my hand off.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly what we needed. We've gone I won't say substantial, but we've definitely made a start, a solid start to addressing our problems and setting some foundations in for the future. And I will nail my colours to the past and say it will be better than last season, definitely. I don't think LFC can be any worse, surely. I mean, worse is a 9th, 10th, 11th or 12th place finish. Because don't forget, we finished 8th.
Yeah, we won't be that.
I'd like to think it'd be 5th or 6th, but I mean, I always had these conversations with my mate Kev Deaton, obviously the infamous fan who hasn't missed a game since 1926, you know, whenever it was. But when we get our 1, our 6, on the 7, on the field together, and if that stays and we get some continuity in our selections, obviously in our performances and our form, dare I try and get a little bit more optimistic? I don't know. I'm probably a little bit pessimistic at the minute, thinking, yeah, it won't be as bad as last year, but I don't think we'll be shouting from the rooftops or anything like that. But then again, what is shouting from the rooftops this year? If we get a better brand of rugby, if we do finish inside the playoffs, and I say we're fun to watch every week, then actually, that is not a bad way to look at it. A season of sacrifice, can you call it? I don't know if that will sit well with many, but you know, it's a rebuild right now. It's a complete, utter rebuild that Hull FC have got to do. We talked about it last week, about identity and what we want to see in a Hull FC side. And I want to see us set those foundations this year. I want to see us rip up teams and play with flair and play with finesse and look, you know, be fun to watch and be vibrant in attack. And like I say, if we get that, everything else, I know it's a cliche, but the results take care of themselves, and we will win more games with a better brand of rugby. And we've all been crying out for it, attack. You know, this goes back as far as Richard Agar days. We always mention the freestyle, free scoring Sean McRae team of 2004. When we beat Salford 82-6, we beat Widnes 70-4, we put 50 past, you know, three or four other teams, and we scored 40 quite regularly as well against your Castlefords and your Wakefields, and that's the type of rugby we want to see. And we've got the players to do that.
You're right, that team were likely to let in 40, but we were likely to score 42. That was always the thing, wasn't it? The team was insane. But yeah, I mean, you're right, and you know, the point that we made last week, and it was a point that actually, when I listened back to the podcast, I'm really proud that we made, was the point about our identity as a team and our identity as a club. And it's important, and it's an important thing that I think sometimes we do lose a little bit of sight of, and I think it's important that we get that back.
Absolutely, 100% agree. And the start of that, I guess, is on Sunday at Headingley, when Hull's strongest pre-season side that will be available will take on Leeds in Tom Briscoe's testimonial game. I was a massive fan of Tom Briscoe, Hull, just to finish off here. You know, 90 tries in it that he got for the club. It's a pretty fair effort, considering he had two really bad ankle injuries as a teenager as well. And, you know, he's a fan forever. He was a quiet lad that got on with his business. He was an absolutely excellent servant. I sort of look at it, take my Hull FC glasses off. When he negotiated his deal in 2013, he decided, oh, I'm going to look at my options in the NRL. Ends up signing for Leeds. Yeah, great geography. It pissed us all off. You know, Leeds isn't southeast Sydney. But then I sort of think, well, he justified it, because 2015 he won Super League and the Challenge Cup. 2017 he won Super League. 2020 he won the Challenge Cup. Also, Challenge Cup infamous final record, 5 tries against the nearest and dearest. He has justified his decision. I suppose it won't sit well with people, especially going to Leeds, because you look at Mick Harrison, look at Gary Schofield, Lee Crooks. It never sits well with a whole player going to Leeds. But he has justified his move. And unfortunately, that's the thing. And the reason I'm mentioning all this is because we've talked about identity. We want to get to a stage where our very best players, because there's no doubt Tom Briscoe was one of Hull's best back then, we want to get to a stage where Hull FC's identity and Hull FC's brand of rugby is so good that these players don't want to go to Leeds, they don't want to go to St Helens, they don't want to go to wherever, Castleford, wherever. They want to stay at Hull FC. Yeah. And if Hull FC had that identity, well, Tom Briscoe would arguably be pushing, dare I say, Clive Sullivan's try record for Hull FC right now, rather than playing in Leeds Rhinos colours.
100%. Yeah.
It's just something to think about. Will I give him some grief on Sunday? No, I'll applaud him, because another thing with Tom Briscoe, every single time, win, lose or draw at Headingley, or even when he comes back to the KCOM, he claps the whole fans. He comes around and he claps us. He's a proper professional, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't want to blow smoke up his arse, because like I say, some people are very bitter of the fact they went to Leeds, but you can, respect is a word that isn't given, it's earned. And Tom Briscoe definitely earned some respect. He's a proper player. You don't go out, you know, you don't hear about him shitting white substances up his nose, or out drinking or boozing or, you know, womanising or anything like that. He just gets on with rugby, real quiet lad, model professional, and he's had a very good career, and fair play to him.
Yeah, He has, you know, and you're right. I mean, there's when he went to Leeds, he was in absolute the peak of his career. But I still think we got more or less the best out of him.
It was phenomenal, you know, absolutely phenomenal.
There's a try he scored against Leeds where he kind of broke through about 15 tackles. You know, that one that he just came from deep and just went straight through the middle was just incredible. And obviously the great try against Rovers where you know he skipped down the wing at the KC.
West Ham touchline.
Yeah, just amazing.
Mick Vella was the closest Rovers player that got to him that day.
Mick Vella.
That's outstanding, isn't it? Mick Vella.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. But yeah, you know, I mean, he's obviously what he's done at Leeds, more power to him. And I think it's the right decision if you're gonna have a testimonial game. You have it against the two teams that have been your two teams. You know, it's nice that it's Hull and Leeds, and I think it's nice that the club have accepted the invitation to be the team that play against, because I think it's the right thing to do.
Absolutely, it is. Yeah. Yeah, and it should be a good game as well. And obviously, it's against a side that I dare say we're going to be competing with for those fifth, sixth positions.
That lower end of the five, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Yeah, and you know, if Luke Gale's playing as well, it'd be interested to see how he goes against his previous employers.
Yeah, what type of reception he gets.
There's a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be interesting. Obviously, we'll talk about that next week. And anything else that pops up this week? Shout out to Benji, hashtag the greatest. No, not the player, the dog, who sat through this podcast. Absolutely excellent. Top debut. And I even heard a sound from him. Fantastic.
Yeah, and to my 11-year-old Jack Harrison, who has COVID at the moment. So, who's been sniffling and wheezy and running a temperature and everything. But, you know, he's fine. He's absolutely fine. He's just been taking the mickey out of me that England lost the Ashes, because obviously he's Australian-born and bred and just loves to really put the hammer into his old man, which is great.
It's graceful. He's English.
Kind of. if he decides to play for Hull, mate, and especially with a name like Jack Harrison, if he decides to play for Hull, don't you worry. I kept my citizenship just long enough to make sure that it's on his passport. So
good man. Good man. But yeah, best wishes to Jack. Obviously, I hope he gets better. And likewise with yourself. And just one more thing on that front. One of my best mates is a bloke called Sam Shepherd, and his dad, who I've done a lot of podcasts with, but he was also one of my best radio guests when I worked at Old Kingston Radio. Darren, he's called Darren Shepherd. He was just diagnosed with throat cancer last week, and I wish him my absolute best for obviously the battle he has got ahead. But you know what? He's a really good bloke, his dad, and he's a fighter, and he'll never give up. And yeah, I just want to extend my best wishes to the full Shepherd family. Obviously, Darren, Sam, his wife, Yvonne, daughter, Leah, and obviously brother, Matthew. Yeah, best wishes to you all. We're thinking of you. And I hope, obviously, Daz, you get better soon.
Yeah, and from me as well. Yeah, that's a terrible news. And yeah, you go for it, mate. And don't let it beat you.
Yeah, cheers, mate. And last but not least, thanks to yourself, Rich, for another edition of the podcast. And we'll see you again next week.
Anytime, mate. All good.